Welcome to Assets and Aging, Affording the Future, the live local show that's all about the issues of aging. Who takes care of me when I get older? How do I make decisions? How do I pay for it? Who's going to do all the 10,000 things that I need to have done when I can't take care of myself anymore? Good morning. Glad to have you with us. I'm Bob Scrivano, your host here. And I have been your host here for 18 years right here on KFBK. And just glad to have you with us. There's always so much. I have a pile of stuff here to talk about. And I don't even know where to begin, but we're going to begin in a few minutes with a new study on Alzheimer's. This is only a couple days old, so you're going to want to hang on and stick around for that. There's also a bunch of other stuff. I'm trying to look my way through here while I'm talking to figure out what I want to talk about, and there's always lots of it. Couple things we got to get out of the way. First, remember, I'm not an attorney. I don't practice law. I don't give legal advice. If you want legal advice, you should consult an attorney. I am not securities licensed, don't want to be. I have a California legal document assistant license recorded in Sacramento County, which allows me to prepare legal documents at your direction and request. I've been a legal document assistant now for, 13 years. Long time. I have a California insurance license, doesn't have anything to do with anything, but I have to tell you that. And everything we talk about here is my opinion only, and should never be taken as any form of legal, tax, or financial advice. It is my opinion only. My opinion's quite often a good opinion, but it's my opinion only. If you want more information, if you're looking for help, a couple places you can go. One is go to my website, assetsandaging.com. ASSETS. Assets and aging.com. And when you go to my website, you can check out, get all kinds of information. You can get information on my weekly podcast every Wednesday, in which we talk about different stuff. It's a live podcast. And on my webpage, you can listen to my archived podcasts and radio shows. You can also scroll down and you can sign up for my upcoming workshop. My next workshop is on Saturday, July the 8th, right here in Sacramento. It's free. For more information on my workshop, scroll down on my webpage. Or if you don't have a computer, you can always call me at 800-999-8007, and I will get you tickets to my workshop on July the 8th. That's a Saturday. It's at 10 o'clock. It's at the Crown Plaza. It's free. You need to have tickets to get in. So if you would like to come to my upcoming workshop on July 8th, just call me or go to my website and you can sign up directly. You can also order my new book. My new book is called Navigating Frailty. It's a great book. I like it a lot. It's a family guide to aging with dignity, security, and independence. And it's only $15, and it's electronic only, so it's a download. It's an ebook, so you can read it on your Kindle or your Nook, or you can download it as a PDF and read it on your computer. Again, you can order that on my website by just going to assetsandaging.com. There's a lot of information available in the book. There's a rather extensive glossary. There's 25 little mini chapters that we've developed on, that I developed on different subjects. It's a wonderful little book. And if you are aging or you have someone in your family that's becoming more frail, it's a great resource guide. And it's written not as a technical journal. So it's not written to give you all the technical ins and outs. It's written to help real families with real issues. It's a good book. I'm proud of it. I've had really positive feedback from people who've read it, who liked it, thought it was an easy read, and that it made a difference in their lives. I've already had some families that we've been able to help as a result of reading the book. So, lots of information on my webpage, or again, anytime you have questions or you're in need of help, the best way to get in touch with me, if you can remember nothing else, is you can always call my office at 800-999-8007. So I like telling stories. I like telling stories about people and what they really face. Not what we think they're going to face, but what they're really going to face as they get older, as life becomes more difficult, as they try to deal with an aging parent. It's harder than you can ever imagine. Oh, Bob, I love my mom. I love her. No, love has nothing to do with it. Taking care of an aging or demented or frail parent is harder than anything you can imagine. It really, really is. And to those people who have done it, I talk about caregivers all the time on this show. I salute you. By the way, in addition to my own workshop, if you ever want me to come and speak to your group or organization, I will do that for free. Just give me a call or send me an email. I want to tell you a little story. Somebody came in to see me. And they came in to see me, and they were confused and concerned about some stuff. And as I sat with them, it was clear to me that one spouse had some cognitive issues. I'm not a doctor, but I've been doing this long enough that there are certain telltale hints. And this person exhibited more than one or two telltale hints. So we talked for a long time, and they listened, and we talked, and they listened, and we talked, and they listened, and at the end of the conversation, they decided that maybe there was some stuff they needed to do. And as we did all of this, I watched the well spouse. And the well spouse was clearly stressed out. Clearly. Again, I'm not a doctor, not a psychologist, but I've been observing this for 25 years or more. And they had some lovely children. I assume they were lovely. Except, as usual, the children got in the way. And I'll explain more about that in a minute. But as we talked, it became more and more aware that one of the spouses had some cognitive decline. I mean, it was really clear. So they elected and they said, we think we need to do some stuff to protect down the road in case one of us needs care. We have a house, we have some assets, we're concerned about those. Let's do some stuff. So we did some, we started some stuff. And I got a phone call later that night. And they said, look, we just want to stop everything. We've talked to our children. And our children don't think there's anything we need to do. Our children think we're fine. Now, you need to know that the children all lived somewhere else. So they didn't get to see mom and dad very often. And so they had it, and they're all professional people. And of course, they knew everything about everything. So at the end of the day, they decided to do nothing. Because the children didn't think they needed to do anything. And I'd like to tell you this is an uncommon story, but it's a very common story. And it's common in this sense. The children didn't want to confront the fact that one of their parents was declining cognitively. I'm not going to say that person had dementia. I'm just telling you that their thinking wasn't clear. It was clear to me that one of the parents was struggling with some ability to focus and think clearly. And my guess is, from experience, that that will not get better as that person ages. The children did not want to confront the fact that one of their parents was there. So the children decided that there was nothing they needed to do. And here's the root of the story that I want to get to. The children, as usual, were looking at the wrong person. The children were trying to protect the person that had some cognitive disability while not protecting the spouse who lived with this 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, and watched it as it got worse and worse and worse and worse. So the children made the decision not to protect the well spouse, but out of their own inability to confront what was going on, they wanted to protect the spouse that was declining, because to do otherwise would have meant that the children would all have to admit that their parent was in decline. And as children, as a child, we don't like doing that. I didn't want to admit my mom was in decline. I didn't want to admit my dad was in decline. That wasn't comfortable to confront. But the reality was, that's what was going on. So as a result, they'll go off and do whatever they're going to do. The likelihood is they'll do nothing. And 1 or 2 or 3 years from now, one of two things will happen. Guaranteed. And to some of you, I'm talking to you, and you know who you are. That person will get a lot worse, to the point where it's a crisis. Maybe that person with cognitive decline will wander away. Maybe they'll begin to express hostile tendencies. They'll begin to act up or act out. Their ability to think and to make wise decisions will change, until it's a crisis. The other thing that will happen, though, because the children chose not to protect the well spouse, is that the well spouse will become ill. The well spouse, stress will build in that person's life and will build until it begins to damage the well spouse's health. Now, again, to some of you, I am talking to the situation you're in today. One of the hardest things I confront is the inability for families to deal with the reality they're in. I'm going to read you an article later on that just came out on Alzheimer's. And I think for some of you, it will be shocking. It's not shocking to me, but for some of you, it will be shocking. But I'm not talking about Alzheimer's yet. I'm just talking about a parent that's beginning to fail, either mentally or physically, becoming more frail. You know, things are just, the wheels are just, everybody's just noticing that mom or dad or grammy or grampy is just a little stranger, little off, doesn't think as well, not remember names, I'm not talking about, but tells the same story 12 times in a row. And then the next time you call them up, they tell you the same 12 stories they told you 2 days ago, not remembering that they had that conversation. They can't quite put dates and times together or sequences in order. You know, mom who's been making cake, the same great chocolate cake, for 40 years, all of a sudden can't remember, because she's done it from memory her whole life, all of a sudden can't remember what the recipe is. And everybody's going, Mom, you've made this thing for 30 years. We all love it. I can't find the recipe, and I just don't remember, you know, what the ingredients are. just things that begin to give people a clue that there's some inability to focus. It doesn't have to be a big thing, but we all tend to notice it. And the problem comes when we notice it but choose to do nothing. This week I've dealt with two situations in which, in both cases, it has become a crisis. And it's become a crisis because families who've been observing this decline in a parent or a grandparent or their spouse or whoever for years just didn't want to deal with it. We're a society, as a society, that doesn't like dealing with icky stuff. I don't know a better way to say it, because I don't want to get too technical here. But we don't like dealing with icky stuff. We keep hoping that icky stuff is going to go away. That somehow mom is going to all of a sudden be as bright and sharp as she was when she was, you know, 30 and our mom. Or dad is going to be as bright as he was when he, completely restored that Chevelle SS. You got to be my age to know what that is. All the things that we used to remember that all of a sudden we notice have changed. And all of a sudden we're going to have to deal with icky stuff. We're going to have to deal with the fact that mom or dad or grandma or grandpa is not that same person. And let me tell you, and I'm not telling you anything you don't already know, that's a frightening thought to most of us. That dad or that mom, who was our strength, our rock, baked us the birthday cake all the time, took us bowling, taught us how to camp and build a fire, whatever it was, that person is not there anymore. And that's a really scary thing for families. And I'm speaking now not scientifically, but emotionally. The reason I bring it up is because it's a dangerous way to live. Because that's what results in mom falling at home and breaking her hip, or dad hitting the tub when he slips and falls and having a concussion, or mom rolling out of bed and breaking a hip, or whatever the 10,000 things are that we've quietly noticed all along, but we didn't want to deal with it because it's icky stuff. I'm after 25 years of doing this, more than that, I'm asking you to begin to be observant and be honest about what's going on in your family and with the people that you love and care for. That friend who doesn't remember stuff that you guys did, you know, over and over and over again. Doesn't remember trips that you took. Doesn't remember why you're best friends. Doesn't remember how you met. Whatever it is, I'm not trying to get too deep into this. But at some point, if you care about that person, if you're going to have babies, you know, the way it is. If you're going to have babies, you're going to have to deal with icky stuff. You're going to have to deal with things you never thought you were going to deal with until you had a baby. You didn't know that many things could come out of that many parts of a baby at the same time. You didn't know any of that. You didn't know what they were going to do when you caught them in the underneath the sink with the bleach. And the same thing is true as we begin to age. Children, you're going to have to deal with stuff you never thought you were going to have to deal with, ever. In your wildest imagination, you never, ever, ever thought that you were going to have to deal with that. I'm asking you as politely as I can you have to get involved. If not you, who? If that best friend is not thinking clearly, and he, in fact, or she is, in fact, your best friend, at what point do you get involved? At what point do you say, this is not good? This is not going well. This is not safe. The biggest problem I have is, in dealing with this issue, is children who will sit in a chair opposite me, and dad doesn't remember the house they used to live in, and the children refuse to be confronted by that fact and say, aha, I'm going to have to deal with some icky stuff here, and I'm going to have to make some decisions I never thought I was going to have to make, such as, I'm now going, this is shocking to a lot of families, I'm now going to have to become the decision maker for my mom or my dad or my spouse or my grandma or my grandpa or my whoever it is. And that's a really hard bridge to cross. But again, it's part of what you, how many of you like going to a hospital and visiting people? I don't. I was in a nursing home today, and I was in a nursing home with someone whose sister was in a nursing home, whose husband was in a nursing home, and whose one of their best friends was in a nursing home, and they've all been in the same nursing home over the years. Somebody has to deal with that. In this case, it's a child who was willing to get involved early on and begin to make decisions so that when the parents wound up needing care, everything was planned out and taken care of. The child was willing to deal with icky stuff and begin to take on the responsibility for making decisions for a parent that they never thought they were going to have to make, and did so willingly. Accepted the responsibility and did so willingly. Are you the child of a parent or a grandparent that's beginning to lose it? That's becoming more vulnerable, more frail? Are you? I dealt with someone recently who has a parent. I don't want to give too much away here, but the parent signed the house over to somebody else unbeknownst to the child. Now, I've sent them off to somebody hopefully to get it straightened out, but my point is, are you willing to get involved in your parents' lives enough as they begin to fail and become more fragile and more vulnerable? Are you willing to deal with the icky stuff? Or are you just going to say, no, Mom, no, Dad, don't worry about it. It'll all be okay. You don't have to do that. It'll all be okay. And when children do that sometimes, they condemn their parents to having to make 10 times more difficult decisions in an instant. And it takes away options. When we put things off until it gets really icky, we've taken away options. So I guess my message today is to children and to family. Are you willing to get involved in your mom and dad's life, or are you just going to let it, whatever happens, happens. Que sera, sera. Whatever will be, will be. I don't want to be making decisions for my mom and dad. I don't want to usurp their authority. I don't want to do any of that stuff. I just want to hope it all works out okay. If that's where you are, I can guarantee you one thing. It almost never always works out okay. It just gets worse and worse and more complex and more urgent until we have a full-blown crisis on our hands. If you're in that circumstance and you're looking for help to figure all this out, then give me a call. 800-999-8007. 800-999-8007. 800-999-8007. 800-999-8007. Sign up for my workshop. Go to my website, assetsandaging.com. Sign up for an appointment. The appointment is free. Get to my next workshop. It's free. But begin to get involved in your parents' life so that you can make a difference and they can have the best life possible as they get older and more frail and more fragile and more vulnerable because you decided to get involved in their life so that you can make wise decisions for them so that they can live a better life. I'll be back in just a couple minutes. We're going to talk about a new study on Alzheimer's, lots of other things going on right here at Assets and Aging, Affording the Future. Don't go away. I'm going to take a little commercial break, and then we'll be right back. See you in just a couple seconds. Welcome back to Assets and Aging, Affording the Future, the live local show that's all about the issues of aging. Welcome to the second half of our show. Again, ways to get in contact with me. You can always call my office at 800-999-8007, 800-999-8007. You can go to my website, assetsandaging.com, assetsandaging.com, assetsandaging.com. When you go there, you can sign up for an upcoming workshop. My next workshop is on July the 8th. You can order my book, my ebook, which is there. It's only $15. It's a wonderful book and a wonderful resource on the issues of aging. You can sign up for an appointment. You can call me. You can get information. You can listen to my archived radio shows and podcasts. You can make a difference in your life or the life of that frail, elderly loved one that's in your family. Before I get to the subject here, again, 800-999-8007 is the best way to get a hold of me. I want to do an I told you so. I told you so, I told you so, I told you so. I told you so when the Affordable Care Act passed that, and as Medi-Cal grew, okay, in California, hang on, I got this. Currently in California, there are, where is the number? Where's my total number? I just got this the other day, and now I can't find the number. In California's 58 counties, there are now 14 million people on Medi-Cal. In Sacramento County, there are 561,000 people on Medi-Cal. Only 40,000 of them are 65 or older. The other 520,000 are younger than 65. Now, why do I point this out? Because I said that when this happened, because most doctors don't take Medi-Cal, dental Medi-Cal is terrible, that most people would go to emergency rooms, would flood emergency rooms, and that's where they would receive their care. So what just came out the other day, this is an I told you so, and then we'll get to our discussion, our new study on Alzheimer's. This is from California Healthline from 6/12/17. June the 12th, 2017. California Healthline is a service of the California Healthcare Foundation. Okay? I believe sponsored, I could be wrong with this, but I believe primarily sponsored by Kaiser. But I could be wrong. Don't hold me to that. But it's the California Healthcare Foundation. This is a California Healthline from 6/12/17. Now, what does it say? Medi-Cal patients flocking to emergency rooms more than before the Affordable Care Act. What did I tell you was going to happen? I was right then, and I'm right now. Emergency room visits. Have you been to an emergency room lately? Good luck trying to get help. I hope you don't have a heart attack and wind up having to go to an emergency room. Medi-Cal patients are swamping California emergency rooms in greater numbers than they did before the Affordable Care Act took effect, despite predictions that the health law would ease the burdens on ERs. It was never going to ease the burdens because there aren't enough places that take Medi-Cal. There aren't enough doctors where people can go and receive health care. The only place they can go is the ER. Emergency room visits by people on Medi-Cal rose 75% over 5 years, from 800,000 in the first quarter of 2012 to 1.4 million in the last quarter of 2016. I told you so. I told you that this was going to happen. I told you that was going to happen. Now, why is that important? It means people can't get good health care. Because if you're having to go to an emergency room and sit there for 5 hours because you've got the flu, that's not good health care. The state counts it as health care. Politicians count it as health care. But it's not good health care. You don't get to see your family doctor. Most medical care now under Medi-Cal is given through emergency rooms. I'm not making this stuff up, folks. Go read the study. I told you it was going to happen, and until this thing is fixed, it's going to get worse and worse and worse and worse. Most people now on Medi-Cal receive their health care in the emergency room. That means they have to go sit, they have to take their kids there, they have to be exposed to other diseases because emergency rooms have 100 people sitting there waiting. And wait, and a lot of them, here this happens a lot of them leave because that, you know, unless they have a sick child, because they can't sit there for 2 or 3 or 4 hours waiting to be seen. And that's not counting all the emergencies that roll in the meantime, which push everybody with a cut finger or a broken arm or whatever. You don't think they sit there? They do, folks. Hang out in an emergency room. I'm telling you, it's not good, and anybody that has paid attention over the years knows that it's not good. Okay, so the next thing is, I want to talk again, my contact number 800-999-8007. Or assetsandaging.com. I want to read to you from another study. I got to turn the light on here, otherwise I won't be able to read from this. So this is from an article that appeared in the San Diego Union, it's a newspaper, on 6/13/17. It's an article written by Bradley Fikes. You can go Google it and look it up and read it. I suggest you read it. Let me read you some stuff from this about Alzheimer's. And you're going to be shocked. I was not shocked. You will be shocked. And you will not hear this anywhere else. This hasn't been picked up by other papers. You haven't heard it on the news. But it's stunningly important. And it's going to break Medicare and Medi-Cal with the reality of care when it comes to Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's, I'm reading from the article. Again, San Diego Union Tribune. 6/13/17, and the title of the article is "Focus Alzheimer's Begins Long." Alzheimer's begins long before symptoms of memory loss appear. Study suggests Alzheimer's disease begins destroying the brain years before mental deterioration is detected. A new study suggests, and I'll tell you more about that in a minute. This means there could be twice. Listen to this. There could be twice the number of people with a neurodegenerative disease in the United States and worldwide as currently believed. Cognitively normal individuals who had elevated, I'm reading from the article, who had elevated levels of a toxic brain protein called amyloid experienced more rapid declines in thinking than those with normal levels. This is from a study from the USC, published in the Journal of the American Medical Association recently. And the study adds to evidence, I'm reading from the article, that Alzheimer's actually begins years before symptoms appear, said Paul Azen, MD, senior author of the study. Azen directs the University of Southern California's Alzheimer's Therapeutic Research Institute, located in San Diego. I couldn't make this up if I tried, folks. And I've been saying for years and years and years, There's no such thing as a little dementia. When Dad begins to have a little dementia, he's already had dementia for a long time. We just didn't notice. Published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, I'm reading, the study can be found at and then it's got the website, but you can look it up. Azen is the senior author. Michael Donahue, also of ATRI, is first author. I think this is important confirmation of the hypothesis that has been guiding our work, Azen said. The finding has vast implications for healthcare, according to an accompanying JAMA editorial, which I have to go find and read. I haven't had time to go find it. It poses unsettling questions about how to tell people they may be on the path to Alzheimer's well before any impairment occurs. My story in the first half hour about the person that had some cognitive decline. I don't know if they have Alzheimer's. I don't know if they have some other form of dementia, but they clearly have some form of cognitive decline, and the family refuses to acknowledge it or deal with it. I want to read that section again. The finding has vast implications for healthcare, according to an accompanying JAMA, Journal of the American Medical Association, editorial. It poses unsettling questions about how to tell people they may be on the path to Alzheimer's well before any impairment occurs. And the very definition of this disease should be changed to reflect that people can live with Alzheimer's for a long time without cognitive impairment. The key is they already have the disease and we don't notice it as cognitive impairment begins to change people's lives. They think differently, they say different things, and we don't want to admit the possibility that this could be dementia or Alzheimer's. And it's also beginning to open up the possibility of screenings so that people will know earlier. And by the way, I said USC, this is the University of California, San Diego. Wrong school. Do you understand how important this is? Right now, the average life expectancy from diagnosis of Alzheimer's to death is 8 years. If we now know, or studies are beginning to show, that Alzheimer's could exist for years before we begin to notice cognitive decline, is staggering for healthcare costs in the future. Also, I'm reading from the article. Alzheimer's disease is today diagnosed with cognitive tests, aided in recent years by detection of amyloid, which has long been implicated in Alzheimer's. Previously, Alzheimer's can only be definitively diagnosed by autopsy, when the pathological changes characteristic of Alzheimer's could be detected. Amyloid and other abnormal protein, tau, are believed to start the process, causing neurons to become diseased and eventually die. That has changed with the development of imaging technology to non-invasively detect amyloid and tau in the brains of living people, coupled with more traditional imaging tools. It's really important. And the other important thing that's said in here is moreover, other forms of dementia may well be present in a person with cognitive impairment who has signs of amyloid buildup. There are more than one kind of dementia. We only think about Alzheimer's, but there are lots of different kinds of dementia. The point of this is exactly what I was talking about in the first half hour, which is the importance of families beginning to acknowledge that mom or dad are changing, instead of sitting back and saying, I don't want to be involved in their life, they're just fine, thank you very much. I don't want to start making decisions for my mom and dad. I don't want to get involved in icky stuff. More than 5 million Americans are estimated to have Alzheimer's, according to the National Institute on Aging. What if it's 10 million? What if it's 8 million instead of 5? Now I want to read you something that you got to listen to carefully. A 2013 study, that's 4 years ago, folks, a 2013 study found that care for people with dementia cost an estimated $159 billion to $215 billion in 2010. In 2010, it cost $159 to $215 billion to take care of people with Alzheimer's in 2010. If there are twice as many, what's it going to cost today? What's it going to cost your family to deal with that person who has dementia and Alzheimer's? Or do you want to just continue to not want to deal with icky stuff and pretend that it's not happening in your family's life? And by the way, there are no drugs on the horizon which cure Alzheimer's. There's no over-the-counter stuff. There's no fish oil stuff. There's no whatever you think there is that you've heard about that's going to stop the progression of Alzheimer's. And now we know, per this study, that Alzheimer's could exist for years before it begins to manifest itself. And as a result, there could be twice as many people with Alzheimer's as we currently know about. The cost of that is staggering. Are you prepared to pay it? Are you prepared to watch your parents and your spouse and your family lose everything paying for the cost of care? Do you even have the money to pay for the cost of care? Do you know how to go about preserving assets? Do you know how to go about protecting what you have? Do you know any of that? It's really, really, really important stuff. I mean, it's unbelievably important stuff. Who in your family is beginning to show cognitive decline? Who's beginning, you know, Uncle Fred is a little weird now. Grandma does some really silly things. I would like to start giving it a name. It's called a disease. Dementia is a disease. It's no different than heart disease or kidney disease or liver disease or the flu or anything else. It's a disease. It happens to be a disease of the brain, but it's a disease nonetheless. If 10 million people had breast cancer, we'd all be up in arms. But up to 10 million people could have Alzheimer's, and we don't talk about it. We don't talk about it in our families. We don't talk about it among ourselves because, again, we don't like dealing with icky stuff. When I read this article, first of all, I was blown away that there's actually a study that shows what I've heard people talking about for years, that because our diagnostic tools are so poor, we do a really poor job. We usually can't tell if somebody has dementia and unless we give them cognitive tests, you know, like written tests that they fail. And then we say, oh, this person has dementia. And then the best guess is, do they have dementia or Alzheimer's, or what do they have? But we do it after they've started to exhibit symptoms, and sometimes way into it, because we don't want to admit that this person might have dementia. I talk to a lot of people who will say, well, Dad forgets a little bit. Dad can't remember stuff sometimes. We don't even like giving it a name. It's a disease called dementia, folks. And until we're willing to begin to give it a name and a face and realize that it happens, and it happens to every family, and it happens over and over and over again, and that it costs people, again, let me read you the number. In 2010, let me read this to you one more time. According to the National Institute on Aging, in 2010, we spent between $159 billion and $250 billion on the cost of dementia. That was in 2010. That's the last time a study was done. What do you think it is today? In 2010, assisted living was $2,000 a month. Now it's $6,000 a month. Memory care units are $6,000 and up. So what's it going to cost? And when do you as a family begin to say, you know what, we have to start to deal with this? Well, Bob, I've taken care of all that. Oh, yeah, how have you taken care of all that? Well, you know, we did a will. Great. I'm glad you did a will. It's totally useless in my world. What do you mean it's useless? My son's the executor. Are you dead? Well, no. Is somebody with dementia dead? Well, no. Then why do I care about a will? A will only deals with what happens when I'm dead. It doesn't help me protect anything while I'm alive. Well, Bob, I have a trust. Well, what does it say? Well, it says when I'm dead, No. What does it say what happens if you don't die? What do you mean? Well, let's assume your wife has a stroke. What does it say you can do with, can you protect the assets? Can you protect income? Can you pick a facility? Can you sign a contract? Can you change the bank accounts from one name to another? Can you do all the things that you have to do when someone's incapacitated or incompetent, but not dead? Well, I think it says that. Well, don't you think it would be really nice if you knew? Don't you think it would be really nice if you knew for a certainty? Or you can do what I've read in some articles. You can just get a divorce. That's the answer. Or another favorite one is called half a loaf, which means you spend half of your money on care and then you try to save the other half. That's a real theory, folks. It's called half a loaf. And a lot of people promote it. Or you can go out and go to a workshop somewhere and they'll tell you that they have a product that's going to solve all your problems. No, it's not. At what point do you begin to take a real, hard, fast look at where your family is and begin to deal with the icky stuff and begin to think about stuff in new and different ways? For those of you that watch one of my favorite movies, and if you're a parent or a grandparent, you've probably seen it 8,000 times. It's one of my favorite movies of all times. It's called The Princess Bride. And in The Princess Bride, you'll remember that the hero becomes incapacitated, and he goes to Billy Crystal, who's the Mad Max, the sorcerer, and Mad Max makes up a concoction and gives it to him, and someone says, well, he's dead, and Mad Max says, no, he's only mostly dead. So what do you do with that person in your family who's not dead, but they're mostly are? They're incapacitated. They don't think so well. They do silly things. Their checkbook is overdrawn all the time because they forgot that they made payments. Or better yet, they haven't made payments in 6 months because they were throwing the electric bills away because they didn't know what to do with them. What happens when your mom or dad gets coupons in the mail and you find out they have 13 credit cards that they signed up for? When do you begin to get involved as a family? When do you sit down as a family and say, as a family, we need to attack this? Because usually it's the children that are going to deal with all of this when dad or mom becomes incapacitated or frail or demented or whatever it is. So my plea is today, again, as I've made it many, many times before, is families have to be realistic about this, and you have to be willing to get involved in icky stuff. Stuff you never thought you were going to have to make a decision. Everybody talks about DNRs. I want a DNR. Have you ever had to make a decision about, it's really ugly, folks. When you actually have to make the decision about whether or not someone's life is continued or ends. It's one thing to talk about a DNR or a pulse form or whatever it is in abstract terms. It's another thing when you actually have to make the decision. Frailty is the same thing. It's one thing to say, Dad's a little forgetful, Mom's a little forgetful. It's another thing to say, I'm going to get involved in it, and I have to begin to make decisions, and I have to begin to make decisions to protect that person from what they're going to face in life. 800-999-8007 is my number. The appointment is free. The consultation is free. We'll reason together, and we'll figure out how to make your family's life better. We can do that. I can help you do that. Get to my workshop on July the 8th. You can sign up online at assetsandaging.com, or you can call me at 800-999-8007, and I'll get some information from you and mail you some tickets. But what I can't do for you is make you get up off the chair, go to the phone, or go to the computer and make a difference in your family's life. You could just choose to be a victim and be one of the hundreds of people I've seen who have lost everything to the cost of care. Make a difference in your family's life. Be willing to deal with icky stuff. Be willing to be honest about you or your spouse or your mom or your dad or your grandma or your grandpa. Thanks so much for allowing me into your homes and for listening to this show for all these years. Give me a call, 800-999-8007. Otherwise, we'll see you again here next week, same time, same place. Get to my workshop, get to the website, call me, and set up an appointment. 800-999-8007. So for me, Bob Scrivano, and Assets and Aging, have a wonderful, wonderful week. We'll see you here again next week.